Gamertag Radio presents E3 coverage. Hosts Danny Pena, Paris Lilly, and Peter Toledo are direct from the convention center floor.
What's up, everybody? Pete Rock here. Gamertag Radio. E3 I just got to play Watch Dogs Legion. I didn't think this was going to happen. It's amazing. I'm here with Kent from the dev team.
Hello.
What do you do on the game?
Hi. So my name's Kent, and I'm the game design director on the game.
Awesome. Thank you for being on the show here.
No problem.
So I'm gonna go straight to the big question because everybody's asking NPCs. Mm-hmm. You can use them. It's actually true. The rumor is true. Where did this idea come from?
Got to give credit to Clint on that one. I believe that was his original vision for the project. I wasn't here at the very beginning, so I sort of joined the project midstream. But basically, that was his vision from the beginning. And you know, so much of the investment we've made in this project has come from that idea. And like, you can't switch to that midstream. That's got to be the idea from the very beginning because it infiltrates every part of the game. You know, that type of promise. So that was Clint's original vision for the project.
And you can just come up, select someone, find out if they're going to be useful or not, and then you just, if they aren't, then you can maybe, you know, persuade them and recruit them and bring them over your team. And I actually did that, and I thought it was pretty cool, right? And there's like stats you can say, you know, and when you recruit them, you can choose a class, which
Correct.
Is something new to Watch Dogs.
Yes.
Can you talk more about classes?
Sure. So we wanted to make sure that when you bring people onto your team, they kind of have a different feel and a different utility to the game. And since we've also added sort of a progression path, it's not just a class, but you've actually got 15 levels of progression where you can install perks on characters and really customize their play style. We wanted to make sure that like, when someone comes onto your team, they still remain a distinct personality. We don't want them to become a faceless, you know, soldier who you're just going to throw around. We actually want to make sure that they've got a gameplay identity. And so, we okay?
No, you're fine.
Okay, cool. Perfect. Yeah, so we want to make sure they had a gameplay identity, so we kind of cater to the different play styles. The Enforcer is like your run-and-gun type of class. The Infiltrator is stealth and melee. And then, of course, the Hacker class, classic for Watch Dogs.
And so whose decision was it to use the elderly woman in the game and in the demo?
I'm pretty sure that was also Clint. I think the way Clint works is that he makes you know, big claims and big promises, and he really tries to bite off huge, difficult problems, and then he holds on to them, and he brings the dev team with him, and we follow his vision. So I think he probably said, you know, this is an extreme example of what we could use in a game, right? That's way, way out there.
Right.
And he said, if we can do this, if we can set this endpoint, then we can do everything in between, you know? So I think he was basically saying that, like, yeah, if we can accomplish that, then the rest of it's gravy.
And speaking of extreme, there's now something that we don't really see all too often in games, permadeath.
Correct.
So like you invest this time in your character, and then if they happen to die, you've lost that time investment.
Yeah.
Like, is this another one of Clint's crazy schemes?
That one, I don't know exactly where it came from. I mean, I know that, you know, because we're setting a world that's a very dystopian vision of the future, and we're trying to make sure that the stakes feel very high and it feels like a real situation. And, you know, if we're saying that these people are real and that the problems that are happening in the world are real and the deportations and the difficult subject matter that's going on in our game is real, we don't want to also come in and say that, you know, once they're on your team, oh, they're safe. They're just kind of like a gameplay toy. These are real people. You know, when they come onto your team, when you're not playing them, they're still living their lives. They're still going to work. They're still meeting their friends for drinks. They're still sleeping at home and all these things. So we really wanted to give it a real sense of gravity. You know, permadeath is always an opt-in choice for the player. So you can always get knocked down and make a decision. Am I going to get up and resist, or am I going to, you know, surrender, go to jail, get released a little later and return to the fight, you know? You know, discretion's a better part of valor, I think they say. So you always have that choice. So it is a risk-reward decision. But, you know, if you do opt in, your character could go.
Right. And so speaking of worlds, originally we were set in Chicago, moved to San Francisco, and now London. Why?
So London was really selected because, you know, first, it's a truly iconic city. And that's something that the Watch Dogs franchise has always done. You know, Chicago's got the great architecture. San Francisco's at the heart of the tech movement. So you've got the Silicon Valley thing, obviously connected to technology. And then London being one of the most surveilled cities in the world and being like a true global landmark, you know, like it's truly a global city. So when it's a game about people, you even look at the diversity of the city. There's so many people from all over the world there. You know, over 200 languages are spoken in London. So when you put that together with the high-tech nature of the surveillance there, it's a natural fit because You know, Watch Dogs has always been a franchise about the impact of technology on our lives and how surveillance, you know, impacts people and the invasion of privacy and those type of things. And so London's a very natural selection for that.
And so we've also seen other versions of London in other games as recent as AC Syndicate, right? And like just going through there, you can see like Piccadilly Circus, Trafalgar Square, and things like that. How difficult was it to be able to replicate a city as historic as London as well as you guys did on the team, on the game here?
It's always a challenge to do that. You know, we sent teams to London to do scouting trips and do lots of capture and take pictures of everything and also research the history of the place. It's not just about, oh, I took a picture of this place, I can build a 3D model. It's understanding why was that there? What's the history of it? You know, in the game, you can go around and you can actually find little narrative pieces that might explain the history of certain locations. And so we really tried to lend a lot to the authenticity of the world. And really, it's just a huge team effort from the art direction to the world direction to the, you know, also the characters. It's not like you just see random characters everywhere. Like when you go to a district like Camden versus Westminster, you're seeing different types of people based on where they are. So it's really a huge team effort to have all that authenticity in every aspect of it, even the audio design, you know, everything about it.
No, it's a fantastic job. And talking about variances and things like that, DedSec doesn't seem to be the same group that they were originally, right? They started off as, you know, this little collective, and now they're hacktivists, and now they just seem to be, you know, just more so like terrorists in a sense.
Ooh.
Or they could be construed as terrorists, right? And so, and I guess maybe I'm sounding more corporate in this environment, right? Can you talk a little bit about the change in the way DedSec is doing things? And then on top of that, it's not just the government. You know, now we're talking a private sector as the main, you know, antagonist.
Sure. So I can't really get into the story. You know, we're not talking about some of the story details about how the game starts and how, like, you know, DedSec might have transitioned into London. But it is still very much a group based in hacking. I mean, obviously, hacking's core to the gameplay, as it always has been in Watch Dogs. But I think that, you know, it's safe to say that in this game, the stakes are higher from a narrative perspective than they were in the previous games in terms of, like, you're right, the government has been pushed to the side. The police have been pushed off the streets. Now these are private military contractors, and they're harassing civilians. They're arresting people at checkpoints. They're deporting people. Like, it's a really dark world that we've portrayed. You know, it's speculative fiction, right? Like, it's a you know, projected into the future speculative fiction type of deal. So you know, we've really created a very dark world. You know, there's human trafficking going on with the organized crime. So it's a really, really dark world that we're in. So in that sense, you know, DedSec, I guess, felt the need to take it to the next level. And like, we have to actually bring our city back and put our differences aside and fight together as a resistance. So, you know, with the stakes are, you know, higher in the fictional world, the stakes have to be higher for the heroes as well.
Okay. And so we're looking at a March release for 2020?
March 6th.
Okay. Looking forward to it. Looks amazing from everything that we got a chance to see today at the press conference and then obviously during our hands-on play session. Phenomenal job. Thank you very much for taking the time out.
Thank you so much for liking the game.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.